want to talk to us about. I'm kind of bringing two subjects together. So we're finishing off the love is, and we're going to be looking at the fact that love is what we should be known for. But I'm also starting a new kind of thing that we're going to do for the next 2 weeks. Every year in our church, we look at giving in March. We just use that. That's just the time we pick. There's nothing special about March or scriptural or holy about it, really, unless Easter falls in it. And then we all know that that's a game changer. But we just picked March as a leadership team. And so I'm going to be finishing off this series and just looking at the whole thing of giving this morning. And I want us to turn, if you've got a Bible or an iPad or whatever you use, we're going to be reading from Matthew chapter 14, a very well-known story. Okay, very, very well-known story. But we're going to come and just take a look at it. I've read it this week, and I've been going to church since I was in the womb, so quite a few years. And I've heard this story so many times. It's amazing sometimes when you just set aside some time to read a bit of the Bible that you've read before. God speaks to you new about it. And what I say may not be new to you, but it was new to me. And so I'm going to bring it to us this morning. So we're going to go to verse 13 of Matthew chapter 14. It says this: when Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by a boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them and healed their sick. As evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food." Jesus replied, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." "We have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish," they answered. "Bring them here to me," he said. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. And looking up to heaven, he gave thanks, broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men, besides women and children. And I want to talk to us this morning about how we show love through what we give. And I can remember when I was young and I was living at home. And it was at the time where my sister had decided that church wasn't for her and the Christian lifestyle wasn't for her. And she used to go out on a Saturday night with her mates. And we used to get up on a Sunday morning, and my mum, I don't know how she did this, because we have cheese toasties for dinner, right? But we would go to church and my mum would make a proper Sunday dinner every week. I have failed as a wife and a mum, because we get cheese toasties and Math makes them. All right, so I don't even make them. So, she would get up and she would put all the stuff in the oven, and, we would come home to the smells of meat cooking. Sorry if you're a vegetarian, meat cooking. And we'd come back. And what would happen before we went to church, my mum would just open the door of my sister's bedroom, which at best, you couldn't ever see the carpet. But when all of her mates had come back from the night before, okay, you definitely couldn't see it. And she would just count how many lumps were under duvets in my sister's bedroom, because we never knew how many people she would bring home from when she went out to the pub the night before. So my mum would just count, okay, how many bodies there were in her room and make dinner for that many people. I have no idea. We used to have like the feeding of the 5,000 every Sunday at lunchtime. I have no idea how she used to do it. But every single Sunday, the meat would stretch. I think we just did loads of potatoes. I think that's how we did it, okay? Your plate was full of potatoes and then you got this like little bit of meat, okay? And she would just make it stretch, and she would kind of look in my sister's room every Sunday morning, count the bodies, and then do dinner for that many, because she didn't know whether they would be here or not when we came back. And we are that typical Northern family that say, if you're at our house, you will be fed, whether you want to be or not. You will be, Math says, yeah, you will be fed. We go in and there's got to be, you've got to at least go for 3 meals if you go to my mother's house. If any of you ever venture up that way and go and visit her, which you would all be welcome to do all at once if you like, go and sleep there on a Saturday night. She'll count the bodies and she'll make you some dinner. Okay. But she used to do this every week. And I used to kind of think, how on earth does she do it? I had to do the washing up after it. I wasn't best pleased most weeks. But I used to think, how did she do it? And then you read a story like this and think, okay, at least she had the cooker. At least she had the kitchen. At least we could go and get, you know, some more potatoes out of the bag or whatever. And she had all of these things. Yet these guys were sat in a massive crowd with nothing. And yet Jesus managed to feed them. And we're going to look in a bit more detail about this. And if you read the whole chapter of Matthew 14, you will see at the beginning, let's just put the story into context, shall we? So Jesus had just heard that John the Baptist had been beheaded. You know, someone who was family, someone who was close. Okay, he had just found out that he had been executed. He had just found out that he had died. And so Jesus, we're told at the beginning of the story that we read, went to a solitary place. Jesus wanted to be on his own. Jesus wanted to process his grief. He wanted to process what had just happened to him. And all of a sudden, the crowds knew where he was going and they decided to walk and meet him. So Jesus went, the crowds went, and they kind of collided together. And instead of going, actually, no, I've got my own issues to deal with, the Bible says that Jesus began to teach them. And they were there all day and he healed their sick and he talked to them and he spent time with them. And he was just absolutely amazing, even though he was in these throes of grief. Even though he was like that, he had compassion for the crowd and his compassion was more compelling than his emotional comfort. His compassion for him was more compelling for what he was going to do with the next few hours of his life than his own emotional comfort. And what I want to do this morning in doing our few weeks in talking about giving, I want to kind of come at it from a very different angle than what we have ever done before. And I want to talk to you over the next couple of weeks about poverty. And not just necessarily about how we give and stuff like that. That'll come into it. But I want to talk to us and I want us to become really aware of the kind of society and world that we live in. Because poverty is something we don't really like to talk about, but I think it's probably one of the biggest soul destroyers in our society. I think it's one of the biggest soul destroyers that we have. And we can categorize things so much. And usually we put poverty into the box of finance and stuff. But I want to put it to you this morning, friends, that actually it is so much more than that. And I want to show you from the Bible that actually it's so much more than that. It is so much more than not having a roof over our head. It is so much more than not having food on the table. It is so much more than not having the stuff that everybody else has. Do you know what? I think sometimes wealthy people financially can be some of the poorest people on the planet. And sometimes people with nothing can be the richest. I don't think poverty is just about what we have or what we don't have materially. I think that there is a bigger depth to it than that. And I want to give us some keys on how we can. I had this crazy idea, right? I'm just going to go and tell you my crazy idea, okay? And my crazy idea was simply this. What would it be like if we could end poverty? And then God kind of took it a little bit further than that, which I was quite glad of, and so will you be, okay? And if we could end it for just one person, because that's doable. What would it be like if we could take one person and help that one person and actually just bring an end to some of the poverty that they may live in? Because I believe that as a church, we need to start looking at the whole person, especially when it comes to poverty. Because it's not just about money. It's about relationships. It's about self-esteem. It's about confidence. It's about education. It's about so much more than the box we put it into. And we may first look at it from a financial point of view, but actually, if we are going to show love, we've been talking about love is, and the way that we can show love and the way that we can show people who we are and who God is actually to look at them as a whole person. Take a holistic view and not just deal with a lack of finance, but deal with a lack of education, emotional stability, the lack of health, the lack of relationships, the lack of friendships. Now, I want to put to you today that actually I think probably one of the biggest things in our town and in our community, and I've been praying about this community, one of the biggest things that I think we have is loneliness. Anyone else think that might be a bit of a thing in Louth? It's loneliness. These people, and I'm not just talking about one generation here, because immediately we think of an older generation when we think about that. But I think across the generations, there are people that struggle to build long-lasting relationships that are going to bring them stability and give them that what they need that we all just might get from relationships. I am very wealthy when it comes to relationships. Why? Because I'm in this church. I'm rich on that side of my life. Because as I look around this room, I have people in my world. And I want to bring to us this morning that poverty is so much more than just a financial things. There's more than one way to be poor. But this is what the Bible says to those of us who might feel poor in some way. The Bible says, let the poor say, I am rich. And let the weak say, I am strong. There is a richness and a strength that comes when we have a relationship with Jesus Christ that we don't get anywhere else. I want to flip us over just to another story in the book of Matthew. And I'm just going to read a few verses from Matthew 26. It says this, verse 6, while Jesus was in Bethany in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, which she poured on his head as he was reclining at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. Why this waste, they asked. This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to the poor. Aware of this, Jesus said to them, why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. I think Jesus made a very astute declaration there about the world in which we live in when he said, the poor you will always have. I think that Jesus saw that actually down through time, there will always be people that live in poverty. There will always be people that are poor in some way. And what I want to do is show you what that word actually means. Because it doesn't mean just a lack of food, okay? The word in the original is the word potoko. That is probably not how you pronounce it, but that's how we're going to say it for this morning. And this is what it means. It means reduced to beggary, begging, destitute of wealth, influence, position, or honor. It means someone who is lowly, someone who is afflicted, someone who is destitute of the Christian virtues and eternal riches, someone who is helpless, someone who is powerless to accomplish, or get this, someone who is lacking in anything. I was like, oh, it's not just about what we think it's about. Someone who is lacking in anything. Nelson Mandela says this about poverty. He says, overcoming poverty is not a gesture of charity. It is the protection of a fundamental human right to dignity and a decent life. I want to, in the next couple of weeks, talk to us about how we address the issue of poverty in our community that goes far beyond stuff and material things. It goes into people's self-esteem and mental health. It goes into the way people view themselves. It goes into their education. It goes into their relationships. And I want to suggest to you that actually as a church, we take a little bit more of a holistic view and we look at the whole person rather than just the project we think we can complete or accomplish. Jesus in Matthew 26 makes a very astute observation about humanity and how the world is going to progress or not. And he says this, there will always be people who have lack around you. Always. Sometimes we just need to open our eyes to those who are around us. And what I want to do this morning is to just take 3 points from this to show us how we can show love in our community, but also to talk about and begin to open the conversation about this whole issue of poverty in our community. I can remember years and years ago when we were setting up, we used to run a thing called Beautiful She, which was for young mums under the age of 24. And it was huge in our town. And this area was known as an area with the highest proportion of teenage pregnancy, and Louth in the area in which we live was the place that had the highest rate of teen pregnancy. And if you think about the area that we live, that actually quite astounded me when I found that out. And these were statistics taken from like 2003, 2004. And so we began to set up this thing called Beautiful She, which ran for about 10 years. And I can remember going to a funding thing, and the guy came over, and we were trying to get funding off them, and we were asking them for £10,000 so we could transform what was Wellington Street, the back of it, and so we could make it into a bit more of a place where these young girls could come with their kids could play, they could grab a coffee, and it was just going to be brilliant. And so we met this guy in our offices, and he sat down with me, and before I even had a chance to pitch, and I was ready to pitch this thing. I had everything that I needed. I had done all the work, and we were there. We were armed and we were dangerous, and we were going to get some money out of him. And he came in and he said, "I just have one thing to say to you. Why the heck should I give you money when you live in such a beautiful place as this?" Well, that was like red rag to a bull for me. Because I was like, mate, I live here, you don't. And on the surface, we live in a community that looks amazing. On the surface, we live in a community that just seems nice. And, you know, and why should this funder, they say, why should I give you anything? And we began to talk to him about the need in our town. And at the end, we did get the money. And he did change his mind. And we did manage to kind of, you know, say to him, on the surface, but if you dig a little deeper, you'll actually see the kind of place that we live in. And so what I want to do is just take 3 points out of the story of the feeding of the 5,000 that I've just kind of mulled over this week. And I want to suggest to you that this is the way that we can show love. And this is also the way that we can begin to look at this issue of poverty in our community. The first thing I want to say to you is this, that Jesus saw the real need. Verse 16 says this. He's talking to the disciples who had said to Jesus, tell him to go away and get some food. And Jesus says this, verse 16, Jesus answered, they do not need to go away. You give them something to eat. The disciples don't come off very well in the two stories that I've just read. You know, in Matthew 26, they were indignant, and she shouldn't have, you know, put the perfume over Jesus. And we could have used that money, and the money could have gone to the poor. And in this one, Jesus, tell the crowds to go away now and to get something to eat. And Jesus turns and said, they don't need to go away. You see, Jesus saw their real need. He knew where the provision for the immediate would come from. But get this, he also knew that by keeping them sat down listening, he was feeding more than their stomach. You see, this wasn't about feeding their stomach. The bread and the fish was the immediate answer to the immediate problem. But actually what Jesus wanted to do was keep the crowd. He wanted to keep them there because while he had them there, he could do more for them than just give them some bread and fish. And you know, when we tell the story to our children and you know, it's a wow story and it was amazing and they all had fish and bread. I think my Ollie would rather have fish and chips, but in that those days, it was bread. It wasn't chips. Okay. But he gave them fish and he gave them bread. And we look at that as the kind of real miracle. And I want to put it to you today. I want to suggest to you that actually keeping them sat down, keeping them listening, fed them more than just the food they were about to eat. He gave them more than just a meal. He gave them more than just what was in front of them. Jesus saw all of them, not just their hunger. He saw their need of salvation. He saw their need of education. He saw their need of healing. He saw their need of relationships. He saw them as a whole person. He didn't just see it's getting late and they need to get some food. He saw them as a whole person. And do you know what? Sometimes we just need to keep the influence over someone going, realizing that the longer we keep them around, the more we will feed their soul. The longer we keep people around, the more we get a chance to influence and to help them. To really meet someone where they're at, we need to not see them as a project, but we need to see them as a person. A person who is incredibly loved by Jesus and needs God's transformation in every single way. Sometimes I think we can look at things as projects and what project are we going to set up and what are we going to do? We sat last Sunday night and we just began to pray and God has just began to really challenge and stir me about the people I do life with every single day, the people that I see, the people that I struggle with, the people that I find easy to communicate. And this is the kind of thing that God's been saying to me. The more you can keep around them, Joe, the longer you have a chance to influence. Jesus saw them and he saw the possibility for the miraculous. And you know what? Sometimes we just need to open our eyes to the world around us and look for opportunity for the miraculous. I said that poverty is not just about our finance. And we've heard that this morning as we listened to stories. Some were about provision and finance, and others were about health, and others were about fear. And, you know, and the stories that we heard, others were about careers and stories that we've heard. It's not all about the one thing that we think poverty is about. Jesus saw every need that they had, and he knew that if he sent them away, they wouldn't receive what they needed. And as a church, we need to be a place where everyone can come. Some are going to be harder to reach than others, but we need to be a place where we just keep bringing them. We just keep bringing them. They just keep coming. The disciples' answer was to send them away, but God's answer was to bring them close. And sometimes if we're honest in our humanity, our answer can be to send them away when God's answer is just bring them in a little bit closer. You might not know how to meet their need, but just bring them in a little bit closer. I can remember being in my home church and my parents were the youth pastors and the children's pastors and, you know, the general people that fed most people. And so my dad was running this youth group, and when we would rock up for youth, like, you wouldn't look at my dad and go, wow, he is a real cool dude, okay? He's never really, like, been the cool dude dad, right? But he deeply loves people and deeply, deeply loves people. In fact, the first time I ever saw my dad cry, my dad's a typical Yorkshire man and doesn't cry, but the first time I ever saw my dad cry was when he spoke to our young people and told them about Jesus. And he stood there just emotional. And I was like, what is going on? And just God, they loved young people and they loved kids and they would do anything for them. And when my dad was running youth, he didn't do any cool programs. In fact, he was probably the uncoolest youth group ever, right? But he just invited everyone in. So if we saw kids outside, we'd just invite them in for a cup of tea. And we'd just say, yeah, come in. And we were getting like, you know, 40 kids in from the street into our youth stuff. And they started coming to church on a Sunday. And they were walking in and out and they were disrupting everything. And I thought it was great. I was never allowed to do that as a kid. But I thought it was great. And there was just so much disruption. And then like one of them committed the unforgivable sin. And it was, the church had finished and we were doing the cafe thing at the church, and one of them got into an argument with one of the popular girls in youth. It wasn't me. I wasn't one of the popular girls in youth. And one of these kids spat at her, and they all got kicked out of church. And I was I'm actually a very submissive person. And I never caused any problems in church, but I was angry. I was like, we are spending every week telling these kids Jesus loves them and you've just booted them all out of church. So this is what I did. I'm not saying that I did the right thing, young people, right? So just have to put that disclaimer in, okay? But I would go up, I would get a cup of tea, I would sneak it out because they were all congregating in the kind of courtyard of our church. I'd sneak out and I'd give them a cup of tea, and then I'd go back in and I'd sneak up to the tea thing. I'd get another few cups of tea, because if I took 40 cups of tea out, they'd all notice. And they'd said, you're not allowed any tea, just get out. And, you know, and like I was taking them cups of tea. And then one of the eldest kids found out and told on me. So they kind of came out and said, Joe, you are not allowed to do that. And like I say, usually I was a good girl. I was a really good girl. I never even had a detention at school. Like, I was a good kid. And I just turned around and I just went, why? And the elder was also my uncle, so you got to understand, you know, we were in quite a small, close-knit church, and I just went, why? Well, did you hear what he did? I said, I did. And if you ask me, she deserved it. Which I think that was not a good moment for me. And so we kind of had this thing, and I had a mate there who was also sneaking out cups of tea. And so while I was talking to my uncle, she was sneaking behind me with more cups. Oh, they all got a cup of tea. Okay. And I just kind of looked and thought, do you know what? Do you know what? They need Jesus. The kids inside here, they've already got him. They already know him. They already got their eternal destination sorted. Actually, these kids, they don't have anything. They need Jesus. They need a place to go. They need a place to belong. They need a place to come in and grab a cup of tea. And do you know what? Sometimes they're going to disrupt it. And I can remember giving this speech and then at the end thinking, what have I just done? They're going to come and see my parents and I'm going to be in trouble. But my dad was the youth pastor. So secretly, he hugged me. And said, well done. And then gave me a lecture on maybe how I could have gone about it differently. But you know what? Jesus sees people as whole people. He doesn't see them as projects. We sometimes have a tendency to do that and we can get involved in different projects. And I want to say to you, people are not projects. People are incredibly loved by Jesus. They're incredibly loved by God, and God sent his son. We're going to be teaching, if you've got children in our kids program, whether it's Mini Neon or whether it's the older one, we're going to be teaching them this verse this month, for God so loved the world that he gave his only son. Because it kind of ties in giving and it ties in Easter all in one. God so loved the world that he gave. And if he gave, we need to give as well. The second thing that I got from this story was simply this, that Jesus only asks us for what we have. When Jesus said to the disciples, you feed them, the disciples come back to Jesus and they say, but Jesus, this is all we have. And this is what Jesus said, verse 18. He said, bring what you have to me. And I want to suggest to you this morning that it's about time we brought what we had to him. Individually and corporately, we bring what we have to him, because Jesus says, if you'll bring what you've got to me, then I'll add to it. And I'll put all I've got into all you have, and something amazing will begin to happen. What do you have this morning? You may say, I have a little. You may think you have a lot. But what have you got? Everything that we've got. We looked a few months ago at the story of the widow who gave everything that she had. Jesus says, bring what you have this morning to me. Jesus only ever asks for what we have. He doesn't ask. He's not going to say to me, Joe, can you bring me £1 million? Because he knows I ain't got it. But he knows what I do have. He knows what I do have, and he's going to say, Joe, can you bring me what you have? And we're going to look next week of some different ways that we can bring what we have to a God then who will add to it. And I love this. The Bible says that Jesus took what they had. He lifted it to heaven. He thanked God for it. And then the miracle began to happen. Do you know what? When we bring what we have and we thank God for it, it opens the door for a miracle. It opens the door for God to do something incredible. Over the last few years, this phrase has come about, especially in the church. And the phrase is this, poverty mentality. And I want to share with you what I think this is. I think people with a poverty mentality is not those who are necessarily poor. It's those who say, I can't give because there won't be enough. But generosity says, God asks for what I have so he can then add to it and meet the need. He starts by bringing what we have to Jesus. What do you have this morning? What gift? What stuff? I remember one year we decided not to take up kind of an offering, but we needed some things. I think it was for youth. And the whole thing turned into a little bit of a nightmare, but we decided to do an eBay offering. James is going, yeah, we're not doing that. Ain't doing that again, Joe. But we decided to do an eBay offering, and people brought stuff. And we sold it on eBay to raise money for some stuff that we were doing. I say to you this morning, what do you have? Maybe you could sell it yourself on eBay and bring the money. James is going, yeah, please, no. But what do you have this morning that you could give to Jesus? Because God doesn't ask us for what we don't have. Sometimes he asks us to stretch our faith to believe for what he can do and to believe for what he can give and to believe for the miracle that could happen. But he always starts by asking, what do you have? If you read stories in the Bible, you know, where the prophet went to the lady who was just going to cook one last meal and then her and her son were going to die. And the prophet says, what do you have? That happens time and time again in the Bible, where God asks the question, what do you have? I'm asking you the question this morning, church, what do you have? What do you have that you could bring to Jesus and that Jesus could work through? It could be a talent. It could be a gift. It could be your time. I'm going to be giving ways next week that people can be getting involved in what we're doing here. And some of it just is your time. What do you have this morning that God could use? You know, when I was growing up, I was always told, don't say you don't want to do something to God, or don't say you don't want to go to this place, because that is what God will make you do. Who tells people stuff like this? Oh, don't say you don't want to work with kids, because that is what God will make you do. He's going to put your arm up your back and twist it up there until you get down and you work with those children. I don't think God's like that at all. Although I didn't ever tell him I wanted to be a pastor, but but you know, I'm so glad he called me to do that. God only asks what we have, including our dreams, including those things that are on our hearts, those things, those desires that we have. God asks for them this morning. Will you give them to him? Because Jesus knows that what we have added to who he is a winning combination in any community. What we have added to who he is going to be a winning combination. So what do you have this morning? I want to really leave you with that question. And the third thing that I want to talk to you about from this story is simply this: Jesus empowered the disciples for miracles. Did you know Jesus didn't give the food out himself? And it's not because he was lazy. And it's not because he thought that was beneath him. And it's not because he thought that, you know, he shouldn't have to do that, because he is, after all, the Son of God. None of that came into it. He gave the disciples and he said, you go and hand the food out. Why? Because Jesus knew that in a little while he was going to go back to heaven. He knew in a little while these guys are going to be left on the earth to do what I've told them to do. And actually, God and Jesus together, you know, they were like, you give out the food. We're not going to do the miracle. You do the miracle. And he empowered them by taking what they had, by giving thanks for it, by giving it back to them. He empowered them to probably perform one of the greatest miracles and the most talked about miracles that we see in this book and that we read about in this book. I heard this miracle talked about more when I was in kids. And I've probably done this story more in kids. The only one I've done more than this is when Jesus turned water into wine, but that's because I've got a really cool way of telling it. So that's the story that I've probably done more than this one. But this is told in schools. It's told everywhere. Why? Because it is an incredible miracle. And although God gets the glory, the disciples did the miracle. Yeah. Do you know what? Today we have a tendency to think that God will do it all. But God's plan was always mankind doing and him empowering. Right. Do you know what? God's not going to come and feed the people that need feeding in our community. That's why he's put us here. God's not going to come and do all the miracles for us. That's why he's placed the church here. That's why we're here. We're not here for this. Although this is great and I love this, and Sunday morning is one of my favorite times of the entire week. We're not here for this. We're here for that. We're here for them. We're here for people who don't yet know who God is. And in every generation, in every race, in anyone who comes through our doors, who comes across our paths, that's what God has brought us here for. And if we will see them as people, not as projects, if we will give what we have to God, then God will empower us to see transformation take place. Jesus will equip us, but it's us who need to step up and fulfill the Great Commission and see poverty reduced in every single way. You know, this week, as well as it's been, you know, an inconvenient snow week and all that, it's been a bit of a big week worldwide, especially in the Christian faith. As Pastor Billy Graham, it was his funeral on Friday, and I was kind of watching some of it. You know, this was a man who gave what he had and saw God meet with him And the combination of the two together was incredible. And I'm sure if you've been around church circles for a while, you may have your own Billy Graham story. I've been reading online this week, everyone seems to have a Billy Graham story, or their parents saw him. Or I can remember I would have probably been about 8 years old, and we went into this football ground to hear Billy Graham preach. And I can't remember everything he said because I was eight. But what I remember was this. I come from a very sporty family, but my family like rugby, but they're quite football fanatics as well, and we do all support Leeds United. Really sorry, everybody. There's got to be a few of us though, and so I can remember like watching. Sorry, Brian, he's getting a bit twitchy at the back there. Okay, I can remember kind of watching football on the telly, and one of the things I can remember is like when the team wins and everyone kind of jumps over the barriers and they all go running onto the pitch in celebration and all of that kind of stuff. And one thing I can remember was at the end of the meeting, and he gave a gospel appeal. And all I can remember, it reminded me of people going running onto the pitch at the end when your team had won. That's what it reminded me of. And hundreds upon hundreds of people went forward at the end of this thing. And I'm going, Mum, what's that all about? And she's like, they're going forward to become a Christian, Joe. And I was like, okay, I was asking loads of different questions. But hundreds upon hundreds of people went forward. Do you know all it was one man giving what he had to an incredible God. And if you listen to him speak, he would say things like, it's nothing to do with me. There's nothing special about me. It's just God. I can remember throughout the 80s, we filled stadiums with people. People would take, like we took coach loads from our church to go and see him. It was one man who said yes, who brought his yes. Do you know what, church? It's time we stop expecting God to do what he's empowered us to do. God will do what we can't, but he won't do what we can. Do you know, when we bring what we have, all we're doing is we're planting a seed for the future. Might not even be your future. It might be someone else's. The last few months, I've had the absolute privilege of coming back into our youth ministry for a little while. And do you know what the great thing is? Do you know what I see that as? It took away my Friday night off, right? But every Friday I'd rock up. Number one, can I just say our youth team are incredible. Liz and Paul have done a great job in raising up young people who will come and serve. It's just absolutely amazing. And I got to feed them and all of that kind of stuff. And I was back in the kitchen. It was like going back 20 years. But then I got to meet some incredible young people that I'd never met before. Like, they are amazing. They are just incredible. But this is what I saw it as. I was just planting a seed. Took what I had. I had time. I don't have the coolness that I once had, but I had time and I had ability. And I took what I had and I gave it to him, and he opened the doors. We saw just under 40 young people in our youth on Friday night. Incredible what God's beginning to do. And all I took it was, I planted a seed, and a seed that will grow, a seed that will bear fruit. It may not always bear it in me, but it will hopefully bear it in some of the young people that have been coming. I'm believing that fruit of salvation and leadership and confidence and self-esteem and giving them a place to belong. We could have shut our doors for a few months, but we decided not to do that. And all it took was a few hours on a Friday night to keep them open. Do you know what? There's no point asking God to keep the door open when I held the key, not only literally to the door, but also I could do that. No point asking God to do what he's already given us to do. It's no point coming in and pleading with God. God, bring in, you know, bring people into our church, but then refusing to do anything, just seeing them as a project, refusing to do anything for them. Do you know what, church? It's about time we stopped asking God to do what we can do. It's about time we just got on with it. And brought what we have. And for all of us, it's different. And I love that. I love that we have different generations in this place. And for all of us, it's different. And we all have different giftings and different abilities. But this morning, I want to tell you that when we bring those things and when we offer them to him, he empowers us for breakthrough. And he empowers us for the miracle. So you want to know how we show people love? Is we bring what we have. We see the need, we bring what we have, and we allow God to do something incredible through what we already have. So poverty, therefore, is not just about finance. We need to see that we need to see beyond the need that presents itself. Take what we have to Jesus and believe for his empowering and his miracles.